a sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on April 28, 2002, entitled, Whose Truth Are You Living? The texts for the sermon are Philippians 3, verses 4 through 11, and chapter 4, verses 10 through 14, and Matthew 28, verses 1 through 10. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
On Easter, I gave you the analogy of the caterpillar and the butterfly. The butterfly, of course, the prime symbol for Easter and for resurrection. But I mentioned that the caterpillar takes from the egg certain cells, and those cells have within them the blueprint for the legs and the wings of the butterfly. And at a certain point in the caterpillar's development, those cells begin to create discs within the creature, which are received by the immune system of that creature as being alien and foreign, and therefore are attacked. But eventually, they overcome. The zoologist calls those cells imaginal cells. Wonderful name, imaginal cells. They imagine within themselves what that caterpillar can become. And when they finally overcome the resistance of the immune system, the caterpillar is transformed into the butterfly that in all of its beauty flies away in freedom. And that analogy, of course, is received on Easter Sunday as probably an analogy of that transformation that occurs at the point of our death. And certainly it is a beautiful analogy for that possibility. That transformation about which I remain agnostic, because who knows? Who knows what kind of transformation that might be? But this morning I want to point out what I really intended to point out, but probably didn't have the time or didn't have the presence of mind to do, and that's that, as the Easter message title was, just imagine, just imagine. The real miracle of Easter, just imagine. I want to point out that analogy is apropos as well for the possibility in our present existence to come to new insight, to come to transforming understanding, to come to a new way of being, to be given the gift of eyes to see and ears to hear, and to see the same things we've always seen, only to see them in a new way, such that it's transformative of our life and of our being. So, I raised a question this morning in order to get at that. Whose truth are you living? Whose truth are you living? An intentional question. Whose truth are you living? Not whose truth do you believe or what truth do you believe, but whose truth are you living? In other words, what is the vision that informs your life? What is at the center, the passion? What creates the life map, the sense of orientation for your ordinary days and for those crises periods that come now and again? What is that at the center, the core of your being? Whose truth are you living? That question is a question intended to elicit an answer from you, which if I were so lucky, would be my truth. Whose truth are you living? Tell me you're living my truth. Not my truth, but your truth. And perhaps that seems a bit presumptuous. Maybe that even feels arrogant to you. Live my truth? My truth? Who am I after all? My truth. I'm a part of a long tradition. Perhaps in answer to my question, rather than saying my truth, you might say, I'm Christian, or I'm Muslim. Or you might get more particular, you might say, as a Christian, I'm Protestant. And if you're really picky, you might say, I'm a Lutheran, or a Methodist, or a Presbyterian. In other words, we define ourselves often in terms of the group with which we are affiliated. We gain our identity through that group think which has formed and shaped us, the community of which we're a part. And if you would say to me this morning some answer like that, not my truth, but the Christian tradition or etc., then I think you would be in good company, probably in the vast majority of folk who would so define themselves in terms of some such community affiliation. You would probably be the vast majority of people. And I must say, that's not all bad, because if you would have answered me, I live by my truth, you would only have come to your truth through one of the great traditions. Our truth does not emerge in a vacuum. We are shaped, we are formed. And that's why in a community like this, we nurture our children and we shape our youth. We have a responsibility to pass on a tradition which has been a positive tradition, a positive power and shaping force in our lives. It has given us order. It has given us some sense of the meaning of life, of the direction of life. It has spoken to us of God and of humankind and of history and culture, and it has helped us to find our way in the passages of life. And so don't hear me denigrate the tradition and the respective traditions and even the narrowing down of those traditions into credo forms and confessional groups. For all of us, finally, we'll have to come in that way if we would come to our own personal place to stand, to say, ah, I stand in my truth, this my vision. I have seen something, and I live by it, and its illumination floods my life. Nonetheless, it is possible to move beyond that group identity to a personal vision, which can be absolutely transforming and liberating. And maybe if I set it against its opposite, it will make some sense. Recently, someone put in my hands a magazine, and it's called Islam. And this magazine, very nice glossy magazine, has on the cover Discovering the Truth, what Islam stands for. And when I went to the lead article, it gives some of the history of Muhammad. It was during one of these times in a cave that God sent his first revelation to Muhammad. Muhammad was now the final messenger of God and would be used to deliver the universal message to all humankind. The Archangel Gabriel came to Muhammad and commanded, "Read." Muhammad, terrified, replied, "I'm not a reader," for he could neither read nor write, as literacy where he lived was rare. The angel took hold of him, squeezed him with incredible force, released him, and repeated the command, "Read." Muhammad repeated himself, and once again the angel squeezed him until Muhammad thought he could bear it no longer. After the third time, Muhammad felt the intense ringing of bells and heard Gabriel recite the literal word of God, words so powerful that it felt like they were inscribed on his heart. "Read, in the name of your Lord who created you." He ran from the cave in terror, trying to escape the intense and frightening experience, but everywhere he looked on the horizon, he saw Gabriel. He could not escape it. He had already been chosen. Over a period of 23 years, the revelations continued to come. It's a magazine like Christianity Today, or a house organ like the Banner of the Christian Reformed Church, or the Church Herald of the Reformed Church. It's very nicely done, and it presents the truth of Islam. Well, it says, discover the truth, what Islam stands for. And then it gives accounts like this. And I was reminded as I read it of much Christian literature that assumes, again, quite naturally, this is the truth. Well, Gabriel did visit Mary, the Virgin Mary. Do you believe that? If you believe that, do you believe this? If you believe this, then there is a revelation beyond what's here, a final revelation, a final testament. The respective religions claim to have the truth. And so I say, well, I'm a Muslim, or I'm a Christian. Then my truth is defined for me. There's a dogma. There is a teaching. It's all there in creedal expression and confessional statement, in ritual form. All of the accoutrements of the religious experience of the respective traditions, all of them assume a kind of literality about their truthfulness and its congruence with reality as it is. So, if you belong to such a group, you don't have to have your truth. You can have group think. Now, once again, to set this over against what I want to get at this morning, I often have people say to me, "We don't believe that." Oh, don't we? Who's we? We don't believe that, or we believe so-and-so. We do? We do. We, as a group, as a community, do we all? Have we all thought it through? Have we all come to a personal appropriation of that community expression? Hardly, huh? But we find our identity in that group connection, just like we find our identity in the U.S. of A. or the Red Wings, who won again last night. I mean, we get our identity out of that kind of group affiliation, and we become a part of it. And I want to suggest to you this morning that there is a possibility of a transformation when one can move beyond that group think, beyond that traditional statement, to one's own truth, to one's own vision. There is the possibility of finding one's being transformed here and now, coming to that epiphany, saying, oh, I see. To have eyes to see and ears to hear the same old thing in a brand new way. which can be transformative. Paul was such a person. And you say, oh, yeah, Paul. Thank you very much. I'm not Paul. I'm never going to be knocked off my horse by a blinding light from heaven. I'm just ordinary. Don't push me too much. But think of Paul. Of course Paul was a religious genius. I think Paul was one of those special vessels, one whose epiphany becomes epiphanic for a whole community of people who probably, more than Jesus, is responsible for the shape of the Christian faith and Christian tradition. Paul, and I read his little autobiographical piece, Paul was deeply traditioned. He had the right connections, the right parents, the right bloodlines, the right sacramental ritual discipline, the right affiliation in terms of Pharisees' concern for the serious observance of the law, engaged and zealous, so he confesses, I persecuted the church. And in terms of being responsible to that tradition that he had embraced, blameless. Now, he sets all that forth because he says, I set it all to the side because of this transforming vision that I had. And I simply lift him up as one who was so deeply traditioned, but by the grace of God was able to move out of the hedgerows and the binding narrowness of a strong tradition into a grand and glorious freedom that enabled him to soar. Paul experienced a transformation such that it knocked his socks off. And perhaps that's rare, but I hold him up as an example of what can happen. And to make the point that all of that tradition, all of that structure, all of that ritual, all of those creedal statements and confessional expressions, all of it is the scaffolding through which and by which the building is erected. And all of it is good, and all of it is valuable, and all of it is of worth. Because you can't erect the building from ground up without all of that paraphernalia. And neither can you come to your truth, to your personal vision, to that which you would die for because it enables you to live. You can't come to that either without the help and the aid of all of the agencies of the religious experience. But all of those things are simply the means to the end of the vision of God that sets you free. That's the transforming thing of Paul. It was not a matter of Paul, the Jew, becoming a Christian. There wasn't even Christianity at the time. Paul was born a Jew and died a Jew, as Jesus was born a Jew and died a Jew. This was not a conversion from one religion to another. This was a conversion about the understanding of religion. That religion is not a burden to be borne, not a routine to be followed, an obligation to be executed, but religion, all of it, is to be entered into and to practiced in order that we might be set free from religion, in order that we might play fast and loose with it in order that we might live lightly with it, valuing it for what it is, and continuing to make it available in order that it might continue to be the agent of nurture and formation. But then, to recognize that it can be shuck off in order that one can have wings to soar. A minister, a pastor, is crazy to tell his people that. The philosopher George Santayana wrote this marvelous statement. Ultimate insights. Now that's what we're talking about. Ultimate insights have a tendency to undermine the orthodox approaches by which they have been reached. Did you get that? Ultimate insights have a tendency to undermine the orthodox approaches by which they have been reached. The saint pulls his ladder up with him into his private heaven. I get the vision. I see it. I'm thankful for all of the accoutrements of that structure and community that have brought me to the point where I could fly. And then I pull my ladder up into my private heaven, and I don't tell you about it. Because otherwise you might think you don't need me anymore. The community of the faithful, on whose sturdy, dogmatic shoulders he has climbed, must not be deprived of the means of following his example. In other words, I have to be very careful to talk to you about my truth and to suggest for you your truth, because it is the sturdy shoulders of the dogmatic formulas upon which I have climbed to my vision. And if I undermine the sturdy shoulders of the dogmatic tradition, how will you join me in your private heaven? Now, of course, I only do this because I can trust you with it. I only do this because you are a mature community. I only do this because somewhere there has to be a community that is honest about the fact that all religious practice is valuable and relative, important and non-essential, and all of it is for the end and the aim of the vision of God that transforms human life and allows community to be a community of peace and reconciliation. Some years ago, The Economist magazine had a special on God. And there was a statement in it which I never forgot. Can't remember it right now. No, I can remember it. It went like this. The trouble with the world is that there are people who believe they understand God perfectly. And they meet other people who think the same way, only differently. Is that a picture of our world today? While it is necessary in the nurture and the formation of children and youth and adults, to create the possibility for the probing of reality, of God, of grace, of meaning, through structures that have stood the test of time. It is also high time that as a church we get honest. I suppose part of it is all of this terrible struggle in the Catholic Church right now, and all of this language about the Holy Father, and all of the falter all about all of the robes and braids and mitres, and I see all of that, and I think religion institutionalized is a sickness. But I don't know how else to create the possibility of you coming to your own truth unless we continue to think, probe, worship, engage in our ritual, and then trust that now and again, here and there, someone will say, I see, I see, I see.